The Harbinger has captivated millions since its 2011 release, spending over 100 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list and selling over 3 million copies. This prophetic thriller resonated deeply in post-9/11 America, with endorsements from prominent religious leaders and even reaching the desks of government officials. Jonathan Cahn, previously unknown outside his small congregation, became an overnight sensation in religious circles, appearing on major television networks and being invited to speak at the presidential inaugural prayer breakfast. The book's premise, that America's future was foretold through ancient biblical warnings, struck a chord with readers seeking spiritual meaning behind national tragedies. Whether viewed as divine revelation or compelling fiction, The Harbinger undeniably changed how many Americans interpret the relationship between faith and national destiny. The story begins with a fateful encounter in Manhattan between Anna Gorin, a seasoned investigative journalist known for her skepticism, and Nouriel Kaplan, an unassuming figure who makes an extraordinary claim about an ancient mystery that holds the secret of America's future. Despite Anna's well-honed skepticism, cultivated through years of exposing frauds and conspiracy theories, Nouriel produces compelling physical evidence, a small clay seal bearing ancient Hebrew inscriptions that would become the first of 9 prophetic harbingers. The authenticity of the seal immediately captures Anna's attention, not just for its historical significance, but for its inexplicable connection to modern America. Nouriel explains that these harbingers first appeared in ancient Israel as warnings before its destruction, and now, remarkably, they're manifesting in America with precise parallel significance. Each harbinger, he reveals, carries a specific message and appears in a particular sequence, following a divine pattern established millennia ago. Nouriel's personal journey adds another layer of intrigue to the mystery. He describes how the seal arrived unexpectedly in his mailbox one morning, wrapped in simple brown paper with no return address. This led him to seek answers along the Hudson River, where, during a contemplative walk, he encountered an enigmatic figure he refers to as the Prophet. This mysterious man, dressed in a distinctive camel hair coat, demonstrated supernatural knowledge by addressing Nouriel by name without introduction and producing an identical seal. The Prophet's declaration that it was the appointed time for the mystery to be revealed, but not for an ancient nation, sets the stage for a profound revelation about America's future. The narrative gains particular significance through its exploration of parallel covenants. Both America and ancient Israel, Nouriel explains, were founded on similar principles, explicit dedication to God and divine purpose. The Prophet reveals how both nations experienced unprecedented prosperity and protection as a result of these covenants. However, both gradually drifted from their founding principles, replacing divine dependence with self-reliance and spiritual heritage with secular materialism. The parallel becomes especially poignant in the context of 9/11, which Nouriel identifies as America's breach, similar to ancient Israel's first warning through the Assyrian invasion. Both nations responded to these attacks with remarkably similar language and attitude. Israel's defiant declaration, "The bricks have fallen, but we will rebuild with hewn stone," finds its modern echo in American leaders' pronouncements about rebuilding stronger than before. This defiance, rather than spiritual reflection, sets both nations on a path of further harbingers. The mystery's revelation transforms our understanding of current events, suggesting that America's present challenges might not be random occurrences, but part of an ancient pattern of mourning and judgment. Through Nouriel's careful explanation, everyday headlines take on new significance as potential fulfillments of age-old prophetic signs. The first harbinger, the breach, represents the catastrophic removal of divine protection that allowed enemies to penetrate previously impregnable national defenses. For ancient Israel, this momentous breach occurred in 732 BC when Assyrian forces penetrated the northern kingdom's borders, shattering the illusion of invulnerability that had persisted for generations. For America, the breach manifested on September 11, 2001, when terrorists successfully infiltrated the nation's sophisticated security systems and struck at the very symbols of American economic and military supremacy, the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. The parallel timing of these breaches proves particularly noteworthy. Both occurred during periods of unprecedented national prosperity and power, when each nation viewed itself as exceptional and untouchable. Israel had enjoyed centuries of divine protection, while America had just emerged as the world's sole superpower following the Cold War. The breach in both cases came as a shocking reminder of vulnerability, piercing through carefully constructed systems of defense that had been thought unassailable. What's striking is how both breaches were deliberately limited in scope, serving as warnings rather than final judgments. Israel's initial Assyrian invasion, while traumatic, didn't destroy the nation. It functioned as a harbinger of the total destruction that would come if the people didn't return to their founding principles and relationship with God. Similarly, devastating as 9/11 was, claiming nearly 3,000 lives and causing billions in damage, it represented only a fraction of America's power and territory. The prophet explains that such breaches serve as divine alarms, urgent calls to national self-examination and spiritual renewal before more severe judgment follows. The second harbinger, the terrorist, reveals an even more specific and chilling parallel. The Assyrians weren't just another ancient enemy. They were history's first systematic terrorists who methodically perfected fear as a weapon of war. They were infamous for particularly brutal tactics, flaying rebels alive, burning entire cities to the ground, and creating grotesque pyramids of human skulls to terrorize subject populations. The 9/11 attackers, though separated by millennia, employed precisely the same psychological warfare strategy, using spectacular, symbolic violence to instill fear and trauma far beyond the immediate physical damage. Even more remarkably, both the ancient Assyrians and modern Islamic terrorists were Semitic peoples originating from the same geographic region, the Fertile Crescent of the Middle East. The prophet points out a fascinating linguistic connection. Arabic is the closest modern language to the Assyrians' ancient Akkadian tongue, sharing numerous root words and grammatical structures. And in an ironic historical echo, America's military response to 9/11 led it into protracted wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, the very territories that once comprised the heart of the Assyrian Empire. These first two harbingers establish the foundational pattern. America is unwittingly following the same prophetic script that led to ancient Israel's downfall. But rather than recognizing these warnings as calls for national introspection and return to founding principles, both nations responded with defiance and military retaliation rather than genuine reflection, setting the stage for the remaining harbingers to unfold with inexorable precision. The third harbinger, the fallen bricks, manifested literally at ground zero. Just as ancient Israel surveyed its damage and found heaps of fallen clay bricks, Americans emerged from the dust of 9/11 to find the World Trade Center collapsed into massive piles of rubble. These fallen structures weren't just evidence of what had happened, but warnings of potential future destruction if the nation's course remained unchanged. What follows is perhaps the most chilling parallel, the fourth harbinger. The vow of defiance. In Isaiah 9:10, Israel's leaders respond to the Assyrian attack with a declaration. The bricks have fallen, but we will rebuild with hewn stones. The sycamores have been cut down, but we will replace them with cedars. Rather than humbling themselves before God, they vowed to rebuild stronger than before, an act of pride rather than repentance. Remarkably, American leaders repeatedly echoed this exact sentiment after 9/11. From New York's mayor to senators, governors, and even the president, the words, "We will rebuild," became a national mantra. This wasn't merely about practical reconstruction, but about national defiance, rebuilding bigger, better, stronger, and taller than before. The Freedom Tower at Ground Zero became the physical embodiment of this spirit, explicitly described in promotional materials as America's statement of defiance to those who attacked us. The fifth harbinger, the Gezit Stone, adds another layer to this parallel. In the ancient text, Israel vowed to replace ordinary bricks with Gezit stones, specifically quarried and shaped mountain rock, symbolizing human strength and ingenuity. After 9/11, American leaders brought a 20-ton block of Adirondack granite to Ground Zero as a cornerstone for rebuilding. They named it the Freedom Stone and declared it would be a symbolic cornerstone for the rebuilding of New York and the nation. The governor even proclaimed they were laying this cornerstone in the spirit of defiance, unknowingly echoing biblical commentaries about Israel's defiant rebuilding. What makes these parallels so unsettling isn't just their specificity, but the fact that none of the participants realized they were reenacting an ancient pattern of judgment. Each harbinger appeared naturally, organically, yet precisely fulfilled prophecies written thousands of years earlier. The sixth and seventh harbingers involve two trees mentioned in Isaiah's prophecy, the fallen sycamore and its replacement with a stronger Erez tree, cedar or pine. These harbingers manifest with uncanny precision at Ground Zero. During the collapse of the North Tower on 9/11, debris struck down a tree at the edge of Ground Zero, an English sycamore, the Western equivalent of the biblical tree bearing the same name. This fallen sycamore became an impromptu memorial, with crowds gathering to view it, completely unaware of its prophetic significance. Even more remarkably, a brick was found entwined in its roots, directly mirroring Isaiah's words, "The bricks have fallen and the sycamores have been cut down." The seventh harbinger appeared when this fallen sycamore was replaced with a coniferous evergreen, a Norway spruce, Picea abies, belonging to the same Pinacea family as the biblical Erez tree. This replacement tree was ceremonially planted in the exact spot where the sycamore had stood, and was officially named the Ground Zero Tree of Hope, proclaimed as a sign of the indomitable nature of human hope. This perfectly fulfilled the ancient Hebrew concept of chalaf, replacement, from Isaiah's prophecy. What's most striking about these arboreal harbingers is their location. The fallen sycamore and its replacement stood in the courtyard of St. Paul's Chapel, a small stone church that would later be revealed as America's ground of consecration, where George Washington and the first government prayed after the inaugural address, dedicating the nation to God. The prophet explains a crucial principle. The nation's ground of consecration will become the ground of its judgment. The harbingers weren't appearing randomly. They were manifesting at the very site where America had made its covenant with God. This connection between 9/11 and America's founding transforms our understanding of both events. The attacks didn't just target symbols of American power. They struck at the very ground where the nation was spiritually birthed. St. Paul's Chapel, the only building near Ground Zero that survived virtually untouched, became a spontaneous gathering place for prayer and reflection after the attacks. People were mysteriously drawn to this ground of consecration, unknowingly returning to pray where the nation's first leaders had prayed. While the first seven harbingers were physical signs, the eighth and ninth harbingers involve spoken words, specifically the public proclamation of Isaiah 9:10 by America's leaders. These verbal harbingers seal the nation's defiant course, binding America to the same pattern of judgment that befell ancient Israel. The eighth harbinger, the utterance, manifested when a prominent senator and vice presidential candidate delivered a speech in Washington, D.C. exactly 3 years after 9/11, quoting Isaiah 9:10 word for word. The bricks have fallen, but we will build with dressed stones. The sycamores have been cut down, but we will put cedars in their place. Not only did he quote this obscure verse, but his entire speech was built around it, repeatedly connecting America's rebuilding efforts to the symbols in the ancient vow. The speaker had no idea he was actually pronouncing judgment on America, just as Israel's ancient leaders had unknowingly pronounced judgment on their own nation. Even more significantly, the ninth harbinger, the prophecy, appeared the day after 9/11, when the Senate Majority Leader delivered America's first official response to the calamity. In his address, he quoted Isaiah 9:10 and added, "That is what we will do." Though he had no prophetic intent, he unknowingly pronounced judgment on America by invoking the same vow of defiance that preceded Israel's downfall. This pattern culminated in February 2009, when the President of the United States himself became the third witness by declaring before Congress, "We will rebuild, we will recover, and the United States of America will emerge stronger than before." This statement, broadcast worldwide and echoed in headlines from CBS to Al Jazeera, perfectly paralleled biblical commentaries describing Israel's defiant response. They boasted that they would rebuild their devastated country and make it stronger and more glorious than ever before. The significance of three witnesses is biblically profound, establishing truth beyond doubt. That America's highest leaders would unknowingly proclaim the exact words that sealed ancient Israel's judgment, speaking from the same Capitol Hill where the nation's laws are made, creates a prophetic pattern too precise to be coincidental. The mystery deepens with the revelation of the Shemitah, the biblical Sabbath year when debts were canceled and the land rested. This seven-year cycle, deeply embedded in ancient Hebrew law and practice, becomes the prophetic time frame for America's unfolding judgment, connecting the events of 9/11 to the subsequent economic collapse. The Shemitah served multiple purposes. It was a time of rest, renewal, and economic reset that prevented the accumulation of generational debt and promoted social equality. The prophet meticulously reveals how America's post-9/11 economic policies manifested the Isaiah 9:10 effect in startling detail. The Federal Reserve's aggressive slashing of interest rates to historic lows created an unprecedented housing and building boom, exploding credit markets, and massive capital inflows from Asia. Banks began offering subprime mortgages, credit requirements loosened, and speculation ran rampant. Like ancient Israel's defiant building boom after the Assyrian invasion, America's post-9/11 economic resurgence was fundamentally hollow, a house of cards built on debt, leverage, and hubris rather than sound economic principles. When this economic house of cards finally imploded in September 2008, it triggered the greatest economic disaster since the Great Depression. The prophet reveals an astonishing connection that defies statistical probability. The 2001 stock market crash following 9/11 occurred on September 17, 2001, which was the 29th of Elul on the Hebrew calendar, the final day of the Shemitah when all debts were traditionally canceled. The Dow Jones dropped 684 points, setting a record for a single-day decline. Exactly 7 years later, the 2008 financial crisis culminated with the greatest single-day stock market crash in Wall Street history on September 29, 2008, the Dow plunging 777 points. This, too, fell on the 29th of Elul, the exact same day in the biblical calendar. This precise timing transcends mere coincidence, pointing to divine orchestration. Both crashes occurred on the specific 29th of Elul that comes only once every 7 years, the precise day ordained for debt cancellation in biblical law. Furthermore, the Federal Reserve's fateful decision to slash interest rates after 9/11, the first act of defiance that sowed seeds for the later collapse, also occurred on this same significant date. The prophet elaborates that Shemitah carries multiple meanings in Hebrew, including the fall or the letting fall, perfectly describing the economic collapse where markets, businesses, and financial institutions all fell in rapid succession. The global crisis began symbolically with Lehman Brothers being let fall by the Federal Reserve, triggering a cascade of financial failures. The collapse followed the pattern of the biblical Shemitah, wiping out trillions in wealth and effectively canceling massive amounts of debt through defaults and bankruptcies. No human hands could have orchestrated such precise timing across multiple events spanning 7 years. It was God's Shemitah, His letting fall of an economic system built on defiance rather than repentance. The final piece of the mystery connects 9/11 directly to America's founding through a profound series of historical and geographical alignments. On April 30, 1789, immediately following his inauguration as the first president of the United States, George Washington led an extraordinary procession through the streets of New York City, then the nation's capital. Accompanied by both houses of Congress and his entire cabinet, Washington walked to St. Paul's Chapel to consecrate America's future to divine providence. This solemn dedication, recorded meticulously in the annals of Congress, marked the first official act of America's new government and established a sacred covenant between the nation and God. St. Paul's Chapel, a modest Georgian-style church completed in 1766, would prove central to both America's dedication and its warning. The chapel sits at the corner of what would become Ground Zero, making it not just any house of worship, but America's original ground of consecration. When the World Trade Center towers collapsed on September 11, 2001, St. Paul's Chapel stood as the only building in the immediate vicinity to survive completely intact, without even a broken window. This miraculous preservation carried its own symbolic weight, as the chapel became both a testament to survival and a reminder of the nation's first dedication. The connection grows even more significant through Washington's inaugural address at Federal Hall. Speaking with prophetic gravity, he declared, "The propitious smiles of heaven can never be expected on a nation that disregards the eternal rules of order and right which heaven itself hath ordained." These words would lie dormant in America's foundation for over two centuries until 9/11 brought them into sharp focus. When the towers collapsed, the resulting shockwaves created visible cracks in Federal Hall's foundation, a physical manifestation linking America's founding warning to its modern awakening. This geographical and historical convergence reveals 9/11 as far more than a terrorist attack. The very ground where America was dedicated to God became the ground of its warning judgment, fulfilling an ancient biblical principle seen repeatedly throughout history. The ground of dedication invariably becomes the ground of calamity when a nation strays from its founding principles. The precision of these connections, from St. Paul's Chapel's location to Federal Hall's symbolic damage, suggests divine orchestration rather than mere coincidence. The harbingers weren't appearing randomly across New York City, but manifested precisely at locations intimately connected to America's birth and spiritual consecration. Each of the nine harbingers, when viewed through this lens, points back to that foundational day in 1789 and carries the same urgent message that echoes through time: return. This call for national renewal and spiritual recommitment transforms our understanding of 9/11 from a moment of tragedy to a prophetic milestone in America's continuing covenant relationship with God. The prophet emphasizes that while judgment may seem inevitable, there remains hope through genuine repentance. He shares compelling biblical examples where God's mercy prevailed. Sodom could have been spared for just 10 righteous people, demonstrating God's willingness to extend grace even to notoriously wicked cities. During King Josiah's reign, Judah's impending judgment was delayed when the king led national reforms after discovering the lost book of the law. Most significantly, Nineveh, capital of the brutal Assyrian Empire and Israel's feared enemy, received complete mercy when its entire population, from king to commoner, responded to Jonah's warning with genuine contrition and radical lifestyle changes. America's hope depends critically on its response to God's calling. The message isn't hypothetical about if the nation turns from God. That turning is already evident in its institutional rejection of biblical values, removal of prayer from schools, and normalization of practices traditionally considered sinful. Rather, the message is a call to return. The prophet repeatedly references Solomon's profound prophetic declaration from 2 Chronicles 7:14. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land. This verse outlines four specific requirements: humility, prayer, seeking God's presence, and moral reformation. This requires genuine national repentance, not merely seeking comfort after calamity or offering patriotic religious platitudes like "God bless America," but confronting deep-seated moral decline, cultural degradation, and modern forms of idolatry. The prophet emphasizes that believers must lead this repentance, examining their own compromises with secular culture, spiritual apathy, and failure to be distinctive salt and light. America's future hinges on the potent conditional word, if. The narrative culminates with Noriel discovering his providential role in this prophetic drama. His name and calling parallel those of Baruch ben Neriah, Jeremiah's faithful scribe who meticulously recorded divine warnings to ancient Judah before its fall. Like that ancient scribe, Noriel is called to be the Sofer, the dedicated recorder and declarer of prophetic truth, so those who will listen could be saved. He embraces his appointment as a watchman on the wall, knowing he must sound the alarm despite inevitable opposition and ridicule from both secular society and religious establishments. The harbingers thus serve dual purposes. They stand as stark warnings of impending judgment while simultaneously offering hope through genuine return to God. The cross discovered in the ruins of Ground Zero becomes a powerful symbol of this hope, that even amid devastating judgment, God's mercy remains abundantly available to those who turn to Him with sincere hearts. The final mystery transcends mere national destiny to address personal eternity, challenging each reader to consider their individual response to these prophetic warnings and the eternal consequences of their choice.